wonderful. Our recording has started. Our wonderful guest is here, and I'm so glad he's able to connect with us because I'm very excited to bring this young man to all of you today. Today we are with Mr. Miguel Hernandez, and he is a multi-talented gentleman with a lot of wonderful teaching and skill and extremely passionate energy for his topic. We are going to be talking about how to create an online course that sells, and in particular using the Udemy platform, which Miguel is very passionate about and has several courses on the platform itself. So, Miguel, let's move right into it because we're getting a little bit of a late start. Miguel, okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this wonderful world of using your material to teach online and how we can get started doing the same thing for ourselves.
Well, I started my first course back in 2011. That was an animation course that I created just a few months after I started my company doing animation, like explainer demo videos for companies. And then I found out that a lot of the people that came to do these videos didn't have the money to pay for them, right? They were startups struggling, and they couldn't really afford a studio to pay for them. So then I saw an opportunity to create an instructional video where I taught everything I knew to create these demo videos and say, okay, if you cannot afford it, why don't you just take this course and learn to do it yourself? And that was the reason why I created the course, just as an alternative for other people to be able to create these courses on a budget, right? And, yeah, that's pretty much the story.
So, Miguel, you know, let's talk about this for just a moment, you know, because, again, there's so many methods of teaching. I mean, we can teach, obviously, in person. You know, there used to be, I don't know if they had in Canada or not, but I believe they did. There was Learning Annex that was around forever. And then, you know, they've fallen by the wayside. And now, truly, because of platforms like Udemy,
yes.
People are really... I mean, that site is just exploding. It's attracting tons of people who are going on teaching everything from cake decorating to how to write apps for iPhones and what have you to what you do is an animation. So I know you created an animation course on the platform that actually did really, really well. You know, why is it really important for us to really get involved in using an online platform like Udemy?
Well, the main reason I saw is, first of all, I was only selling the course through my website. So if you're starting for the first time and that you don't have a lot of traffic coming to your website, it's going to be very hard to get sales. It doesn't matter how good your course is. You need some kind of traffic or exposure in order to get those sales. What Udemy does for you is that they spend a lot of money advertising courses on your behalf, so you don't have to worry about doing all that marketing yourself, right? And being able to teach is one thing, but being able to market is a completely different skill that most people that know how to teach don't have. So they take over that part, the marketing part, and then they promote the courses on your behalf. So if there's a huge advantage of putting your courses on a platform like Udemy, because, for example, in my case, I did have some traffic coming to my website, but a lot of the sales, most of the sales came through Udemy because they spend money doing Facebook ads, Google ads, and then they, of course, they have a huge email list, and then they would promote my course to their email list on a, you know, monthly basis, and that's how I got a lot of the sales. So if you're starting out, it's very hard to do both the teaching and the marketing. A platform, what it does, it takes care of the marketing for you so you don't have to.
You know, that's a good one because I know so many people, really marketing is not their strong suit. And marketing takes time. I mean, it really is. Well, one, it may not be your strong suit. It may not be the thing that you're passionate about. But it also takes time, even if you are good at it, to really draw attention. So it sounds like to me what you're saying is that the Udemy platform basically takes care of all of that. But if you have a great topic that people are passionate about wanting to learn, that's a great place to put your content.
Exactly.
So what I'd like to do is I'd like, because there's so many components to this conversation, but I guess I want to start out first by asking you what, you know, there's so many different people on this call with so many different backgrounds and different subjects that they're passionate about. What courses, or how would they find out if what they're passionate about doing would actually make a good topic to have on the Udemy platform?
I think any course that is taught by somebody that has a lot of experience and is taught with passion has an opportunity to have an audience. For example, my course, the animation course, it was a big surprise to the Udemy Udemy people that it did so well, because usually the course that do very well in these platforms are usually technical course like programming or web development or design, stuff like that. They didn't really think that a course on just such a niche topic like demo videos would do so well. So I guess that proves the point that as long as the course has a lot of content, quality content, and you start with passion, there's going to be an audience for it. So I tell all my friends, if you have any passion, if you have any skill, just remember all the years that you spend developing the skills, paying other money to teach you, there's a lot of value in that. And if you can package that knowledge into a nice little course and do it with passion, there's always going to be people willing to pay for that, right? And it's surprising at the beginning. You're like, oh, who's going to want to listen to me? But the world is very big. And if somebody was willing to pay you for your knowledge before at work or on your own company, you can be sure that there's people around the world that are willing to pay to get that knowledge from you, from a professional. So in other words, if whatever you know, if you're an expert at what you're doing, there's an opportunity for you to make money teaching online.
I completely agree. I mean, I've seen many of the programs that are on the platform itself, and they actually even show people rating them, how good they are, and leaving comments on them. And it's an extremely popular platform. But I think listening to you speak, and I hear you completely. I believe that if anyone would, you know, pay you in person to teach them how to do something, you know, imagine the reach that you could create by offering it online in a way that you basically just create the content, put it together, as you mentioned, a nice package, which we'll talk about a little bit in a moment, and then a platform that actually does the marketing for you. I mean, how better can that be, you know?
Exactly.
So let's talk about the packaging. So let's say that, you know, someone has decided, okay, I'm really good at this subject, and I really want to go out there and put a program together, put a course together, and put it up on the platform. You know, I know the immediate thinking is, well, how do I do that? What constitutes good content? Is it written? Is it audio? Is it video? What do you recommend as the first steps that someone does once they make the decision that they're going to create a course? What do they need to do to physically start putting those pieces together?
Well, I really recommend you doing video. I mean, and Udemy in particular, the main way of teaching is via video, where you record your screen and your voice, and then you go over, you know, a series of PowerPoint or keynote presentations and covering different content. I mean, you could teach by doing an ebook or something like that, but really the best way is to start recording video. So the way I start doing my courses is I create an outline of all the chapters and lectures that I want to cover, right? So what I do is just open a spreadsheet, and then I divide that course in a series of chapters, which are like the main contents of the course. And then I divide those chapters into a series of lectures. To give you an idea, a good course on Udemy would be anywhere from an hour to 10 hours in content. And every lecture shouldn't be longer than 10 minutes. That way, you know, people can consume that information, that video, and not really get bored. And that's a good strategy. So break down the course first on the spreadsheet, then start recording lecture by lecture. Make sure that every lecture is not too long and that you really package a lot of valuable information in those 5 or 10 minutes of video that you do for each lecture. And it's very important to do this process at the beginning, because that way you know how, you know, it's a way of really structuring the whole process, because recording a good course is a very tedious process. It takes quite a bit of time, and you know, it's sometimes it's tricky because you make mistakes and you have to edit them. But, you know, as long as you start with that outline, you know where you're going, right?
Absolutely. You know, I own Miguel's course, and which is one of the main reason why I wanted him to be a part of this program, because every presenter that I have as a part of this program, I'm familiar with their products. Either I have purchased them or I'm working with them in one way or another. So I fully understand what they have to offer. And I will tell you, I'm glad that you brought that particular piece into this conversation. It's because that alone is what made me reach out to you to ask you to be a part of this program. I think that mm-hmm. spreadsheet is brilliant.
I love a spreadsheet.
I can never consider myself a spreadsheet person. I think when a lot of people hear the word spreadsheet, they immediately think of numbers. But what I love about the spreadsheet exercise that you graciously shared with us is that it allows you to have in one document visually lay out what the topics at the top of each column is going to be, like your main subject.
Exactly.
And then underneath the lines underneath each topic, you sort of, it's almost like your bullet points. These are the things I'm going to talk about individually. And once I saw it all laid out, I was actually able to see where I was able to move things around because it actually made sense to go in a different column.
Yeah.
And I thought that was one of the most powerful pieces of that. And then what's great about it, and to take it a step further, is when you actually are in the process of creating the physical course, meaning recording the videos, as Miguel has suggested, or, you know, making it a spreadsheet or an ebook or whatever the case may be. Once you've completed that piece, you just change the color of that field, and that lets you know that it's done, which I think is great for your momentum because you're realizing I'm actually getting stuff done to put this together.
Yeah, it's really good because it gives you an overall picture of how far you are into the course, and it really helps you to. Otherwise, it's too loose of a process, and you may get discouraged halfway, and you're like, I don't know when this is going to end. But when you see the whole course laid out on a spreadsheet, it's really helpful, you know, to see how far you're in, what are the next steps. It's very easy to modify stuff as you go. I mean, I find it really good. I mean, I use spreadsheets for everything. Half of my business I do with spreadsheets because they're so powerful.
Yeah, they're powerful. And if you have Google Docs, you know, they have spreadsheets available in that, so you don't have to go out and buy a program for it. It's available.
Exactly.
For
free. I use Google Docs all the time, yeah.
Which is even better because then if you're doing this with someone else, you can share the document with them and then the other person can see, you know, the progress that you are making, like if you have a producer you're working with or what have you.
Yes.
So let's talk about video because I know, you know, Ariana and I, our conversation before our call was about using the expressive capability of video, of your voice, and how your expression and tone and cadence comes across in how you use video. We're going to be talking more about video also on Friday with Jules on Friday. But you are really passionate about this topic, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about how to actually pull yourself into the process and make people really excited to you're fun to watch. I have to say that off the bat. <You're just fun. laughs>
Oh, thanks.
So, yeah, could you talk about that a little bit, about how to actually just, you know, really have fun making your videos and why it's important for them to be short?
I mean, this is the tricky part. I've watched a lot of online courses as well. I mean, we all have spent years going to school and listening to lectures from professors. And one of the things I remember is that a big percentage of the instructors I had were very boring delivering their stuff. Maybe what they were saying was interesting, but the delivery was so boring, nobody could pay attention. So it was like 3 p.m. in the afternoon, we just had lunch, and people had trouble staying awake because it's just mumbling stuff. And I thought, if I ever going to teach online, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy that people are bored after, like, you know, 20 seconds listening to that lecture. So that... You can practice that. I mean, it's also a personality thing. That comes to me natural. But if you're going to teach online, be aware that if you expect people to sit down through, like, a bunch of lectures, especially if you have a long course, like my course are like, anywhere from 5 hours to 10 hours, if you expect people to sit down through all of that, you have to take the role of an entertainer to a certain degree. You become an actor. And your job as an actor there is to make that content interesting and be human. Don't try to make it perfect. One of the things I really emphasize is, like, if you make a mistake, as long as it's not huge, which you can edit later, don't worry, you know. Sometimes I sneeze in the middle of the lecture. Well, big deal, you know. I sneeze, I keep teaching, and people find that very, you know, human and daring, and then they laugh a little bit, they relax, and once they're in that relaxed state, it's more likely that they pay attention, because another thing is that they don't really never know what's going to happen next. They're like, what's the next crazy thing Miguel is going to do, right? So there, it's like they're not only they're learning, they're, it's like watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if anybody that is teaching should have that in mind, don't just overdo it. Don't go crazy, right? But have that in the back of your mind, you know. So put yourself on the shoes of the person listening to that lecture and see, would that be interesting? Am I being entertaining enough? Am I making this, like, fun, right? And that would help a lot to make your courses more interesting.
You know, so much of what you're saying, what I love about the way this whole process is going is that every single one of you is like echoing a piece of something that was spoken about earlier. You know, we spoke about earlier call with Barbara about overcoming resistance, and one of the things that she talked about was overcoming the need for perfectionism. Is that if you don't get it right the first take, or if you're flubbing over the words, quote unquote, and what have you, that somehow or another you're messing up and it's not going to work. Or moving on to what Ariana was talking about, where she was speaking about, you know, using your voice more expressively and bringing more fun and play into your presentations. And, you know, all of this just moves seamlessly into what you're talking about when you're appearing on camera, teaching whatever piece of your, you know, your program that you're teaching, being able to be gentle with yourself, not feel like, you know, oh, I messed up or I stumbled over my words or whatever. You know, it's not that you can't, you know, that's what editing is for. It's not like you can't take that piece out if it's really bad.
Exactly.
Or just relax and have fun and just shoot it again. You know, it's all fine. And
yeah.
And again, people, but I think the biggest thing that you said, Miguel, which I think is extremely important, is that people just really want to connect with you. The content, yes, is what they're purchasing, but they really want to connect with you. And I think the more you can be comfortable with that process, the more fun they'll have and you'll have as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some people that they don't want to show their face on the camera. Being on camera is not something that comes natural to most people, right? You still can do a course where your face is not in there, and that's fine because your voice can be entertaining. But I think the courses that people enjoy the most and they can have that emotional connection with the teacher are those where you can see the face of the instructor. Now, you don't have to have your face all the time in there because it could be distracting from the actual teaching content. But when you want to make a specific point and you're addressing your audience directly, I think it's important to show that face. And that's very easy to do with these programs that allow you to record your screen, like Camtasia or ScreenFlow. You can turn on and off that camera. And when you want to make a strong point, look at the camera, make that strong point, and then you can turn it off and keep doing your presentation, right? But I think showing your face, it really helps to make it more human and fun to watch.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, let's talk about some of the things that, because you brought up Camtasia and ScreenFlow, and I know some people listening have no idea what those two software programs mean.
Yeah.
Or what they can do. So let's talk
yeah.
about the pieces that people will need to actually record, as you mentioned, the desktop and so forth.
Yes. So luckily now it's very, very simple to do this, even if you have almost zero technical knowledge. All you need is a laptop with a webcam. And if you don't have a webcam in your laptop, you just can buy a USB webcam, and you're ready to go. And then in terms of hardware, now for software, all you need is a piece of software that allows you to record your screen, your computer screen, and also the image that your webcam is recording, which should be your face typically, right? And the main two pieces of software that you can buy for doing this, one is called Camtasia. And that software works for both PC and Macintosh. And then I usually use ScreenFlow, which is very similar to Camtasia, and it costs the same amount of money too, but it's only for Mac. Both are very simple to use, and both allow you to do everything you need to do in order to create those lectures that then once you've recorded, you just upload, like if it was a video to YouTube, you just upload it to whichever platform, in my case, Udemy. So that's pretty much it. And of course, if, another piece I forgot to mention, you need to be able to record the sound. So if you don't have an embedded microphone in your laptop or computer, then you should get a cheap USB mic would do the job. And if you want more quality, you can spend, you know, like for $100, you can get really good USB microphones that will make sure that pick up a really clear audio and your voice sounds really nice.
So basically, so you're saying you need a piece of software, either Camtasia or ScreenFlow, and you need at least you can rely on your internal microphone that's built into your laptop or your desktop computer, or
exactly.
You can, if you want even better quality, you can get an external mic, and those can run between what rank, what price range, Miguel?
The actual software, it costs, I think both of them cost close to $100, $99.
Okay.
Whether it's Camtasia or ScreenFlow, they're direct competitors, so they're pricing the same way. The microphone, you can find it from like, you know, $20 to $150. And then I forgot to mention also, if you're actually using going through a presentation, you will need to get PowerPoint or Keynote. For Macintosh, I use Keynote. And Keynote is, I think, is $20 from the Apple App Store. And my PowerPoint is a little more expensive. I think it's $100-something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically for, it sounds like to me, under about $250, you can pretty much get a studio set up, if you have a computer already, assuming.
Exactly. Once you have your computer, it's a very little investment that you need to start getting, to be able to start recording your lectures. Obviously, from that basic setup, you can go and, you know, spend a lot more money. But I really think if you're just starting out, you know, that's all you need. I mean, some people actually get studio lights, and maybe they get a camera operator, or, you know, they get a green screen. You can go all the way, right? But if you're
right.
just starting out, you can get really quality video with just today's simple tools like that, like those I just mentioned.
Now, what about lighting, Miguel?
Lighting, yeah, that's an important part, because you want to make sure people see your face properly, and also that it's well centered within the screen. I notice a lot of people, maybe they have the laptop on their table and they're looking down on the camera, and that angle is not very flattering. You want to make sure that the camera is at the eye level, right? I mean, obviously, if you don't do this, it still will work, but if you want to make sure that the quality is there, it doesn't take much effort to just raise your laptop, maybe with some books or with a laptop stand. Make sure that webcam is directly at the same level of your eyes, that your face is centered on the screen. And then in terms of lighting, I usually just use a couple of lights. I think that they're called the halogen daylight. So the color should be like daylight color, like that really white color. And then a big one, like a spotlight, is the one that is pointing almost directly into my face. And then I usually have one on the side that creates a little bit of depth and makes it look more professional. But as long as you can see the face clearly and it's centered, you're good to go. Then in terms of backgrounds, it's important to make sure you don't have a very busy or distracting background. So what I usually do, I shoot with a white wall behind me. So that way it's just very plain. All you see is my face and a white background. It's not distracting at all. And you can see my face very clearly. I also try to, you know, now talking in terms of sound, when you're speaking, make sure you're speaking loud and clear, because you want to make sure people don't miss a single word, right?
Right.
So, and that's pretty much it, you know. And then practice.
Absolutely. Now, how much practice do you do? Do you do a lot of practice sessions before you start recording, or do you just kind of go for it and then just go back and kind of clean it up later? I mean, what do you recommend for someone just starting?
Usually, if you know, I'm recording over a period of several days. So what I would do is when I get up in the morning, you know, before I start recording, I kind of get my bearings going. So maybe I'll just pretend to do one or two lectures without recording, just to get the tone and the energy there. And once I feel I have that energy, which doesn't take that long, maybe 5 to 10 minutes of practice, then I'm like, okay, now I can go and I'm ready to go. And I just can keep recording for like a couple of hours straight, no problem, right? But a little bit of rehearsing always helps, just to make sure that the energy is there, right? And then, you know, just make sure that the energy is consistent. Sometimes it's hard to keep the energy going, right, if you've been recording for a long time. So what I recommend, if you feel you're starting to get a little bit frustrated because you're making mistakes, or, you know, you spend too many hours doing this, or like many of us, we have a main day job, or you have kids, you know, and that all of that day activity, you know, is probably influencing your mood. Make sure that just if you're starting to feel frustrated, just take a break. Don't try to push through it, because it's going to come up on the video, the frustration. And
absolutely,
it's not going to help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. 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 Yeah. Now, with that said, so there's a couple of points I want to bring up, because I know you had mentioned a moment ago that the videos that you record, and I guess one part of the question I want to ask is for clarification, but the video should be roughly no more than about 10 minutes
yes.
per individual sort of lesson. And the reason
yes.
why is because it just people's attention span isn't much longer for much more than that. Is that why they should be shorter?
That's one of the reasons. I mean, I don't think there's any specific scientific study, but people say, yeah, like 7 to 10 minutes is what normal people can pay attention to. One of the persons I modeled this after was Salman Khan from the Khan Academy, because when he started to become popular, he uploaded videos to YouTube, and back then YouTube had a 10-minute limit upload. And it actually that worked to his advantage, because then he realized that those videos were never too long for people to get bored and stop paying attention, right? And then now he's recorded thousands of them, and he still keeps all the videos under, you know, around 10 minutes. Although now that limitation on YouTube, it doesn't exist anymore. It turns out that, you know, he tried that, it worked. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty good rule of thumb. Make sure your videos are not longer than 10 minutes, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, depending upon how many, quote-unquote, chapters there are in the course and how much information and exercises there are for people to do, if they are too long, I think what happens is people start to lose a little bit. They get tired, physically tired, and I don't think they have as much energy to engage if it's going on too long.
Yeah.
So you mentioned video as obviously being a key piece of having some video, either screen share, desktop screen share, and or you speaking on camera directly face-to-face or a combination thereof. What other pieces of content do you recommend for people to flesh out a good course?
So you got your hardware, your software. You got your outline, your spreadsheet outline. You got the right attitude. You're making sure your videos are 10 minutes long. Obviously do a little bit of research before you're actually going to speak about something. Even if you're an expert, you know, I always do a little bit of, research online on Google, make sure that things haven't changed. But that's pretty much it in terms of getting started and having, you know, and starting to do your course. And then
right.
once you've done that, once you've recorded all those videos, well, then you just upload them to Udemy, right?
Now, so I understand you, but what I wanted to ask you more specifically was, are there other types of content that you can put into your Udemy course? Does it all have to be video?
Oh, sorry, yeah. You can
put
all kinds of content. Yes. The main content that they recommend is video, but you can upload all kinds of documents, PDFs, images, PowerPoint presentations. I think you can actually do live webinars through their platform.
Really?
You can also do quizzes, which is a new feature they have. which is really cool, just to make sure people have, you know, learning stuff. So, yeah, like, it's very complete in terms of the content that you can upload. So it's really cool.
Wonderful.
In fact, you know, for example, many times you'll have the video, your actual lecture, but maybe there's some content or some files that are associated to that video. You can put them side by side to the video, which is really cool. So people can watch the video, and on the right-hand side, they can see all the related documents that they can download as an additional content for the course.
That's fantastic. So basically then, I mean, while video is the number one preference, but you're saying that you can actually use multiple different mediums to be able to, and I think that's probably encouraged to mix it up and have a little bit of different ways to engage.
Yeah, well, the thing is that also there's many instructors that come into the Udemy platform that already had teaching materials because they were instructors in the physical world, and they had all this, like slides and documents, and that way all they have to do is they just can basically upload them to Udemy and make them accessible to their students, right? And so it's a fairly easy transition for people that already have teaching materials to go to the virtual teaching world.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So what about podcasts? Can you just put up audio files as well?
Yeah, you can put in audio files too. Yeah.
Beautiful. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great. So that really takes, for some people who are listening who are maybe like, oh, I'm just not doing video, they don't want to deal with it, that does give them an option. But in your experience, though, having some video content as a part of your course does make it more attractive, though, to end users.
I mean, now I've met a lot of the instructors on the Udemy platform, and yeah, all of them. I haven't seen a single one that doesn't have video as their main way of delivering their teaching materials. It's just a more engaging way of learning, I think.
I think so, too. I agree. Yeah. And like I say, but also, too, I think it's important to mix it up because some people, all have different learning styles. Some of us like to read. Some of us like to watch. Some like to listen. So I think mixing it up, gives you a break from having to be on camera all the time, too.
It
also breaks up the experience for the end user.
Exactly.
So we've got our hardware. We've got our topic. We know what we're going to talk about. We've put our course together. Let's get into the meat of how we're going to actually monetize this. So I know that from what I've seen on the platform is that the price points for the courses are all over the map. Do you have any recommendations or strategies, Miguel, on how to price your program?
Yes. Actually, recently, I think Udemy released to some of the instructors some rules of thumb to price the courses. And it was something like anywhere from $5 to $10 per hour of content, of video content. That was more or less, when they took the averages of pricing, a good rule of thumb. So if you have 1 hour of content, $10 for it is reasonable. I mean, some people charge a lot more. It also depends on the value or how unique or how competitive is the market, how many similar courses there are, right? But if it's a very niche course that, you're the top expert in the world and nobody else has a similar course, well, you can price it a lot higher because there's not a lot of competition. If you're teaching something like HTML programming or how to use, Microsoft Word, well, there's, hundreds of courses like that. So then, obviously, you're competing against a larger number of instructors, so the prices come down. But usually they say that $5 to $10 per hour of content, and that the courses that do the best are the ones that are, more than 2 hours in total length. Because then people do feel that they're getting a lot for their money, right?
Gotcha.
So that's a good way of pricing them.
Okay. So roughly around $10 per hour of video content. Now, how would you equate those numbers in regards to, as we spoke about, PDFs or PowerPoints or audio things? How would you equate those numbers into that number?
That's a tricky one because all my courses are almost pure video, so for me it's easy to make the calculation, right? When you're just if your course didn't have any video, then I don't know exactly how I would do it. Maybe I would try to figure out how long it would take to go through the whole all the content. So
okay.
Let's say if reading the whole content would take me 10 hours, then I would think it would be fair to charge $100 for that, right? You know, looking
right.
at how the market is and all of that. So I would just estimate how long it would take to go through the content.
And I think, too, you could probably also look at what other people are charging if it's related to your particular niche and see how they're pricing, too, as kind of a guidepost. Would you think that would be a good way to also kind of gauge your pricing?
Sorry?
So let's say, for an example, you teach a course on how to one of your courses, which I want to speak about in a moment, is on animation,
yes.
how to make animated
yes.
videos.
Yes.
If there were other video courses out there on the platform that also taught on that topic, would you look at what they're charging too as a way to kind of decide
oh,
what your number should
yeah,
be?
Yeah, of course, yeah. The first thing when you start doing your course, you do a little bit of research, see if there are similar courses, how much they're being priced. And then if you're gonna, for example, charge more than the average people are charging for a similar course, then you really have to think, how is my course unique or better that I can justify charging more? Now, there's a big psychological effect on pricing as well. For example, you could have two very almost identical courses, but one is priced 50% more, people immediately are going to assume that the more expensive course is better because psychologically, if it's more expensive, well, it has to be better, right? And it turns out that sometimes a course that is a little bit more expensive can actually do better than a similar course that is cheaper just because of the perceived value that people get from the course, right? And this takes sometimes trial and error, right? But there's been cases where, you know, you could price the same course like at $50, at $70, and $100. And many times you can find out that, you know, the one that sells the most is the $70 version. Maybe the $100 version feels too expensive and the $50 seems too cheap. So people are like, nah, maybe it's not that good. But $70 is like a nice number that, you know, people are like, okay, that must be pretty good. So it's interesting. It's almost like whole science, learning how to price products.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, and that psychology of pricing, you know, flows into everything, not just physical or online courses or physical courses, but in everything. And it's 100% correct is that people, when things are, quote-unquote, priced higher than something that's comparative, the immediate assumption is that it is more valuable. There's more to it than the one that,
yeah.
quote-unquote, a lower price. So
yeah.
With that psychology in mind for everyone listening moving forward is don't necessarily – I wouldn't intentionally underprice my course if there's something similar, just thinking that it would get me more sales. I would actually go the other side and actually see what I can do to make mine better and actually charge more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there is another aspect of pricing that a lot of people overlook, and is that some people say, well, if I charge a lot less, I'll get a lot more sales. And that may be true, but you may start getting the quality of the students may actually drop because people would just get it because, okay, this is pocket money, you know, $10, $5, sure, I'll buy the course. But these are people that won't really respect the content because they didn't really have to, you know, spend a lot of money on it. So you may get lower quality students that maybe, you know, you want to make sure that the people that are taking your course really care about the stuff. And you know if they spend a significant amount of money that they're going to respect your course a lot more than if they spend little money, right? And that's the type of students you want to get. It's not just about selling as many, you know, units as you can. It's about making sure you're pricing it fairly because that way you'll also get the best possible students, right? So that's an important thing to have in mind.
Yes. this is a really good conversation to have, and I'm glad that we're talking about this, because I feel that this conversation echoes into everything that we do as a part of this program, as a part of monetizing your gifts. I think it's the cornerstone. Pricing is something that a lot of us struggle with. And again, this is just one example of where pricing is important, but this carries over into everything that you're doing. So you don't always want to be labeled as the low-cost leader. You want to be able to be the person that really focuses on creating value and highly valued content and really creating things that engage people. So this is a wonderful conversation. Thank you for sharing those pieces about that.
Yeah.
So, Miguel, I wanted to ask you in regards to, you know, you said that the Udemy platform does handle a lot of the marketing, but you do also recommend that the listeners also do some marketing themselves, too. And in your program, you actually have a whole section on marketing.
Yes.
What would you say three things that you would recommend that we do, assuming our course is on there? Before I ask the question, let me ask this question first. Once the course is all uploaded into the platform, using Udemy for an example, how long is there an approval process? How long does it take before the course is actually active and available for sale?
Originally, it was instant, but now things have changed because there's so many instructors in the platform that they have to do some quality control, right? It's also in the best interest of Udemy having really good content to make sure that they, you know, that people get a good user experience, right? So now it's a little bit more difficult. Before your course is going to get approved, there it's going to go through an approval process where some people internally are going to review the quality of it. And also, for example, they want to make sure that every single lecture has a proper title and description, you know, and that, you know, that the sales page contains, you know, proper language, is written properly. That, for example, if you can do things internally on Udemy, like creating coupons, discount coupons, right? So, for example, they don't want you to post discount coupons on your sales page. So, anyways, the course will go through a several, you know, through a review process, and then it would take. It depends, you know, but it would take anywhere from a couple of days to a week to get approved, usually.
Okay. So it's not a super long process, but there is a quality control process that does happen with getting the course approved.
Exactly. There is. Yeah, and this is good because it also makes sure that you're delivering your best game, right? It's not just, I'm going to upload something cheap and fast and hopefully I make some money. No, that's not gonna work. You're gonna have to do a little bit of make sure that your stuff is good.
Right. Wonderful. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, people want to buy good things, so that's wonderful. So now this ties into the next question. I know you mentioned coupons for a moment a second ago, but in our last, you know, we probably have about 7-8 minutes to go. What do you recommend as some key marketing things that us as individuals can do to promote our courses and get more attention to them?
Well, the first one is leverage social media as much as you can. So definitely, you should have a Facebook page, a Twitter account, almost every single social media account that you can have it. It's not going to hurt you to be able to reach as many people as possible. And then learn how to use them. It's not about just creating these social media accounts and then spamming everybody with, buy my course. No, try to develop relationships, real relationships with followers that really believe on your stuff. And that this is a process that takes, it doesn't happen overnight. It's something that it takes months or sometimes years to develop a big following, but you should do that from day one. Start, you know, gathering these followers on Twitter and on Facebook, and make sure you keep them updated with what you're doing, delivering them good content that they can share, that is interesting. And once in a while, when you have a new course or an offering, well, just drop it in there, because that would allow you. It's going to do two things for you. It's going to, you know, if you are good on social media, people are going to be like, oh, this is an interesting person. And then they'll be more likely to buy with you once they like you as a person in these social media channels, right? And also, when you're posting stuff on Twitter and Facebook, you know, you always can put links back to a blog post. So having a blog is very important for two different reasons. One is because once you have really good content, people will be happy to read it and share it. And also it will drive traffic to your own site. And from that side, you can promote your courses as well, right? The second thing about having a blog post with content relevant to your industry is that it will get indexed by search engines like Google or Bing. So when people are looking for courses or information on whatever you're teaching, you are more likely to appear on the top results, which will drive traffic to your site, which will drive traffic to your course, which eventually a percentage of this traffic becomes sales, right? So those are very important things. You know, use social media, start a blog talking about your industry or your course or your topics of interest. And then another one, the third thing that I really recommend is to start collecting email addresses on your blog if you can, because what you want to create is have a big email list of people that have bought your courses or that have visited your website and are really like what you're talking about, because this becomes like your extended family of fans, which you can send newsletters to like once a week or once a month. And then again, keep a relationship with them. And then whenever you have a new course, you send them an offer, and those become a lot of those convert very well. So if you have a 1,000 people on your email list, if they're quality followers, you can convert easily 5-10% of those 1,000 and easily get, you know, a couple of days 100 sales just from that email list, right? So very important to do that. Social media, your own blog, and then make sure you have a newsletter and you're collecting email addresses.
That's fantastic. And that and what you're sharing with us, Miguel, is just what I think as far as marketing online, as far as online marketing goes, these are all core tenants, I feel, in my opinion, that everyone should be having some type of a presence online, meaning a website or a blog of some sort, some way to collect email addresses, and being active on social media. That should just be your foundational pieces, period, no matter what you're selling or offering.
Exactly.
That's wonderful. So in our last minutes together, I know that your animation course was what really got you started, and you put it up, and I think you'd said to me that you did like almost like $100,000 in a year on this course. I mean, it's just an amazing story. You know, I mean, from the time you got it started was it immediate sales? Did it take time for the sales to come through? I mean, how did it all kind of come together for
you? Well, truth is that the sales have been very consistent for the last 2 years. But I guess they have been because I've been working really hard on making sure that the traffic keeps coming through the blog, that my courses are relevant on Udemy, that I keep that newsletter, happening, social media, everything that I just mentioned on self-promoting, I keep doing that, right? So as long as you keep that, so it takes a little bit of work. And, of course, when you're just coming into this for the first time and you're like, I'm just going to teach, and you realize, well, if you actually want to get sales, Udemy can help you only so far. So you have to be ready to put the time and effort to do all that self-promoting, right? But in my case, because I've been doing those things on a regular basis, the sales have been very consistent, right? And it was very surprising to me that I was able to sell so much. I couldn't even believe it. I'm like, really? So that's why I say, man, what a better thing you could do. If you love to teach and you have an expertise, now is the time for you to take advantage of this a special moment in time and put your content out there. And obviously it's getting very competitive because it's such a sweet thing to be able to do that. Now everybody wants to do it, which I'm not surprised.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, Miguel, I mean, we're getting close to the end of our time, but I do want to share with everyone is that Miguel, as I mentioned at the top of the call, has created an amazing course, which I personally own. It's called Teach What You Love and Make Money. And it's an amazing course that is, I mean, he is one of the, I believe, one of the most successful Udemy course designers on the platform. And he's graciously offered a 50% discount off of his training program. And if you go to, if you're on the webcast and you're looking at this on the page, there's a link there that should take you over to the gift page where you can see all of the bonuses that all of the presenters have offered. If you don't have that link and you're listening over the phone, that's getpaidforyourcreativity.com/gifts, G-I-F-T-S. And you will scroll down and you'll see Miguel's wonderful photograph there. You can tell he's an animated guy. He loves his expression. And you will see the link to his program and the code you can enter to invest in it. So if this is something that you're thinking about implementing into your mix of your own way to monetize your gifts, I highly recommend it. I can't recommend it enough. It's an amazing program. So, Miguel, as we wrap up, is there any last words that you have for us you want to share?
Well, it was a pleasure to be here. I feel very honored to be asked all these questions. And I really, like, whoever is listening, if they want to have any questions, you know, that they want to ask directly, they can write to me at Miguel, M-I-G-U-E-L, at GrumoMedia.com, or just go to GrumoMedia.com, my website, and just go to the contact page and you can ask me any questions. I'd be happy to answer them. And I really encourage you, sit down tonight if you can and start creating that outline on a spreadsheet, and nothing bad can come out of it. You know, it'll be a great experience to be able to put that knowledge out there. You know, now is the time to do it.
Yeah. Miguel, could you spell the URL for your email address?
Yes. So it's Miguel, as in M-I-G-U-E-L, at Grumo, which is J, sorry, my English is so bad, is GRUMOMEDIA.com, GrumoMedia.com.
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful. So, and as I said at the top of the call today, is that all of this is about taking what you're learning and also taking action immediately. So if you're thinking about developing a course, start with that spreadsheet, start that outline, investigate Miguel's program for yourself, see if it's something that you'd like to add to your library. As I have mentioned in all the calls, is that the replays will be available later on this evening. Again, they are for purchase only. You can either purchase the Muse package for $94, or you can purchase the individual replays for $20. And all that information will be posted later on tonight with the summary sheets and the highlight points. I've taken notes, quite a few notes from Miguel's conversation, so those will be coming out in the next coming days. So with that said, Miguel, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. And
thank you.
I wanted to have you. Thank you. So join us back. We're going to take an hour break, and we will be coming back at 4 p.m. Pacific with Debbie Horovitch, and she's going to be talking about Google Plus on-air hangout and why you should be paying attention to it and how to get started on the process. So I will see you all at 4 o'clock. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon. Enjoy your lunch, and I'll see you in a little bit. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.